Scott Bertram, in for Steve on the Steve Gruber Show. Johnny Cash on this day in 1969, starting a four-week run at number one on the album chart with Johnny Cash at San Quentin. It's not the live version, but he did play I Walk the Line at San Quentin. A live concert given to inmates and the follow-up to the At Folsom Prison album. Johnny Cash, number one on this day, 1969. Again, Scott Bertram sitting in for Steve, broadcasting live from campus here on Hillsdale at Hillsdale College. Students back next week. Classes begin. We're all getting prepared. Joining us now is Dr. Richard Ebeling, a senior fellow at AIER and the BB&T Distinguished Professor of Ethics and Free Enterprise Leadership at the Citadel. And he's got a new book, For a New Liberalism, available now at Amazon and elsewhere. Dr. Ebeling, thanks for joining us.
It's a great pleasure to be with you, and it's interesting you're on the Hillsdale campus because I taught there for 15 years. I was held the Ludwig von Mises chair before I moved on to become the president of the Foundation for Economic Education and then back to academia after that. But it's a real pleasure to be with you.
Yes, and there are some people here who still talk about you and only say good things as far as you know.
Well, that's good. It shows that the $5 I send them each month is paying off.
So tell us a bit about For a New Liberalism, and you can define this better than I, certainly, but you know, people hear liberalism and they think of the left, and this is classical liberalism. It's a little different, right?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, the word liberalism was twisted and stolen by the left, both the socialist left and what in America came to be known as, quote, the progressive left. Precisely because the name had such a positive implication and history. Because in the early 19th century, the early 1800s, when the word liberalism became popularized, it meant a political philosophy of individual liberty, of respect for private property, the recognition of a free market, free enterprise economy, both at home and abroad, an impartial rule of law, and constitutionally limited government. And that was the agenda of the original liberals of the 19th century, both in Europe and the United States. And it gave us the freedoms that we take for granted today. But precisely because of its attractiveness, the left stole it. And by saying, well, you know, the old liberalism is nice. They talk about negative things, you know, protecting us from violations of freedom of speech or freedom of the press. But we need to have a positive freedom where the government cares for us, gives us redistributed wealth so we have a fair chance in life. And so they basically twisted the word into meaning a watered-down version of socialism. What I attempt to do in this book, in a way that I believe that the interested and informed citizen voter can read, enjoy, and perhaps learn some things from, is to rearticulate the case for liberty in the sense of that older liberalism. And I call it a new liberalism because we need to restore that older liberalism and refine it and improve it so it once again is ideal to turn away from political paternalism and to a society of individual liberty and personal responsibility.
This book, For a New Liberalism, is kind of an explainer, right? It will help people understand what you mean. I'm curious, when you were beginning to shape your point of view and your thinking, what writers, what works spoke to you?
That's an interesting question. Well, I got interested in these ideas when I was a teenager. I was about 16 years old. I'll admit it, I was a nerd.
That's okay.
When I was in high school, I was going to be a really lonely guy on Friday and Saturday night when the girls already call you the professor. Oh, I was a lonely guy. But I did get interested in these ideas then. And the people who influenced me was the free market journalist Henry Hazlitt, who wrote Economics in One Lesson, the famous French advocate of liberty of the 19th century, Frederick Bastiat, with his great essay, The Law. Then more modernly, Ludwig von Mises, the famous Austrian economist, his protege and equally famous Austrian economist, Friedrich Hayek, of course, Milton Friedman and others. But those are the people who influenced me. And then, of course, I read others such as Ayn Rand and a few others. And all of these people helped shape my ideas into believing in and seeing the importance of individual freedom, private property, free enterprise, and personal responsibility in society of voluntary association and not compulsory government.
So you think you are a nerd. I brought Milton Friedman's Free to Choose with me as the reading choice on my honeymoon. So I know if we're competing here, I don't know. I think we're close.
When my wife married me, and I was then teaching at Hillsdale, and we were buying a house and deciding how to decorate our bedroom, I wanted a giant picture of Ludwig von Mises and of Friedrich Hayek on the wall. And she said, any place, but not in the bedroom.
Vetoed, yes. Dr. Richard Ebeling with us. His new book, For a New Liberalism. How do you find the current climate when it comes to the marketplace of ideas? I mean, we are so locked into this cable news 20-second soundbite, who's louder. When it comes to debating ideas and introducing ideas, is it tougher now or is it just different now?
If I can use the famous opening line of Charles Dickens' The Tale of Two Cities, it's the best of times and it's the worst of times. It's the best of times because there are so many now venues to get these ideas across through the internet, through social media. We're no longer locked in to just relying upon the New York Times and the Washington Post, for example, or more conservative publications such as the Wall Street Journal and National Review. There's this wide arena and avenues by which ideas can get out. And that makes it the best of times, if you will, the venues available. And there's a huge undercurrent of interest in these ideas. But the worst of times is that in spite of the fall of communism at the end of the 20th century and belief that freedom now had triumphed over collectivism, there has been this vast resurgence of collectivist and statist ideas centered in the campuses and the academic left that is attempting to indoctrinate and brainwash and make robot-like followers of all of these college students who shout down freedom of speech, who say that any criticism of government policies of any sort is an example of white privilege and racism, so that they try to shut down any discourse and debate by labeling you with these inflammatory words. This is nothing more than if we were to go back to the 1930s, the Nazi-type tactics in the Germany of that time to shut down any opposition to them, or how the Soviets would accuse everyone of being a capitalist exploiter and an enemy of the people to shut down discussion and legitimate debate. This is the danger. But instead of Marxian class conflict, we now have the identity politics of race and gender and this idea that you're no longer an individual. Mm-hmm. The old Marxists used to say you belong to a class, the workers or the capitalists. Today, they say you're not an individual. You're a particular racial or gender minority, and therefore they're collectivizing and tribalizing all these aspects of the public arena, and this is very, very dangerous.
Dr. Richard Ebeling, the new book, For a New Liberalism, Amazon.com and elsewhere. Dr. Ebeling, thanks for joining us here on the Steve Gruber Show.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Scott Bertram in for Steve on the Steve Gruber Show.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk, the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it.
You don't know what.
Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org. brought to you by Susan G. Coleman and the Ad Council.
Adopt U.S. Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You're bringing your daughter to her favorite pop star's concert. Do you A, wear earplugs?
Isn't this fun, Dad?
I have a soft pretzel.
B, remember the moment with matching concert t-shirts.
That's going to be $180.
Or we can just take a photo.
C, show her how you used to do concerts.
We're going crowd surfing!
I can't. It's too heavy.
Oh, my God. Ah.
Or D, just roll with it.
Woo! Justin! Look at us! We're over here!
Justin! OMG! I love you, Justin! I love you!
When it comes to parenting, there are no perfect answers. But that's okay, because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.